According to the internet aggregator and pop culture site Know Your Meme, on June 16th of 2018, a Redditor who goes by the handle Zenerations posted a joke to the subreddit Dank Memes. It featured an image of two identical coffins, pine boxes, if you know what I mean. On top of each one of those coffins was labeled on one, successful people, and on one, unsuccessful people. At the bottom of the photo was an Egyptian tomb in all of its glorious splendor, and it was labeled people who say thanks to the bus driver. The post gained almost immediately over 42,000 likes. In the course of the next several days, the meme spread, gaining first tens of thousands, then hundreds of thousands of reposts, and ultimately ending up as a feature in the massive multiplayer game Fortnite. Whereupon departing out of the flying school bus and into battle, one can press down on the in-game direction pad and thank the bus driver. This is how a meme is born. Memes are more than just funny pictures on the internet. Memes are discrete units of culture that are passed along among members of the community along technological lines. Like genes, and here I mean the things that make us who we are, not denim, like genes, from which memes borrow the sound of their name, these units of culture ensure and inform future generations of culture. Also like genes, they have the potential through cultural sharing and cross-pollination to jump from culture to culture, to appear across diverse genres, and even to mutate as time goes on. In this way, memes have the ability to expose both the similarities and differences between cultures, and they also serve as important loci for cross-cultural communication. Though I don't want to take away from the historical verity of today's story, I do in fact believe deeply that Jesus performed miracles, especially healings. Healing stories like the one of the 10 lepers, that's lepers, mentioned to me earlier that someone thought it was leopards. It's going to be a sermon for enunciation. The story of that of the 10 lepers appears to have served something akin to a meme in the late Bronze Age Greco-Roman world. Most of the great teachers of the day, even some who were not linked to specific deistic religious traditions, performed similar signs, and many of these, like the story of Jesus and the 10 lepers, were written down. Similarities and differences among the stories suggest that they may have circulated between various cultures to be modified, expanded, or even trumped. My teacher is better than yours. As they moved around through the communities. Though Jesus' healing of the 10 lepers must have been life-changing from the point of view of the lepers themselves, the ongoing value of the story is the way in which it has the power to change both the culture into which it was born and all other cultures that come into contact with it. Now, leprosy as a cultural phenomenon, rather than simply a disease, has its roots, at least for Jewish and Christian cultures, in the purity laws of the Torah. It describes what we now know to be a broad variety of various skin ailments, many of which can be treated today with over-the-counter medicines, though some cannot. Though highly communicable and dangerous because of these high contagion rates and the challenges in finding effective treatment, diagnosis of leprosy came with permanent expulsion from the community. Unlike contact with blood or dead bodies, leprosy could not be simply washed off or waited out. It was in many ways a double death sentence, to die both painfully and alone. Jesus, however, sees beyond that in his healing wisdom and skips a few pages back in the Torah codes and says, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." This is what happens when your skin condition cleared up. And interestingly, it would involve ultimately making a sacrifice, one that spanned both reconciliation with the divine, but also thanksgiving. The blood of the animal and its pleasing odor of the smoke would have both covered the transgression that had made the person unclean to begin with and stemmed any further retribution on either ex-leper or nation. It would thank God for his merciful acts through all generations upon his chosen people, and even on the lives of these outcasts. Now, this casts the nine in a slightly different light, doesn't it? At the end of the day, it is not that the ex-lepers were ungrateful at their core. What's really at stake is how they went about expressing their thanks. Inasmuch as Jesus' healing had made the nine a part of the corpus of God's people again, they made a corporate thanksgiving. What sets the tenth apart, the foreigner, is that he turned back and reached out to Jesus personally. This was a powerful teaching for those of Jesus' and later Luke's audiences. Recall that the setting of this story is Samaria, the great borderland of the Bronze Age Middle East, the realm of those who were neither fully Jewish nor fully Gentile, but most importantly, not fully Jewish. And recall that Luke's community, much like ours today, was a mixture of people with various relationships to the land, people, and places of God, to the state, and to the church. Today's message is both about and for people in the margins, people trying to find their place in the family of God. Now, it's not that Jesus' followers or us are by nature more thankful than anyone else, but rather Jesus' point is that the people in general should always focus on the personal angle of their relationship with God. As opposed to the theology of the Second Temple Judaism, Christians should not look for a sacro-socio-economical complex. Exactly. To approach the Almighty. We have Jesus, God incarnate. Rather than needing to be first allowed back into the community of God's people and then make proper thanksgiving, we are able on our own to approach the throne of grace through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Note in the story that while all 10 lepers were cleansed, in Greek, katharizdo, related to the concept of catharsis, only the one who truly understands the source of his cleansing and turns around to make personal thanksgiving is made well. Sozo, related to soteriology and salvation. Though all 10 would indeed return to the community, giving thanks with the community to God that cleanses, the one, through faith, has seen Jesus for who he really is, the incarnation of the God who saves. Should leprosy return or some other uncleanness befall the nine, and it certainly would, they would once again find themselves on the outside of the community in need of further cleansing to be reestablished in their right relationship with God. But the one who had truly seen and known Jesus, the one who was made whole again, even though he was a foreigner to God's people, he would never fall out of the personal relationship and community with God, no matter what sin or sickness or uncleanness happened. This is the reality that we know as Christians. It's also the one thing that we need to practice in order to maintain. Yes, the cleanness and salvation of our baptism is indelible and irrevocable. But the personal relationship with God through Christ needs to be nurtured. Not because ignoring it will change the way God feels about us. God loves us totally and all the time. But because allowing the relationship to lie fallow and unattended will inevitably change the way we feel about God. So how do we maintain or even grow our personal relationship with God? First, and perhaps most churchy of an answer, we need to have a faithful and robust prayer life. A prayer life that honors and activates all aspects of our relationship with God, from petitions for ourselves and thanksgivings to intercessions for others, confessions of our misdeeds, and even the unawkward silence of contemplation and adoration. To be in relationship with God in Jesus Christ, one must spend time with God through Jesus Christ. Kind of funny how that works. But there are other ways to practice too. Though sometimes the church, I think, makes too much of the notion of a personal relationship with God, what I believe that we really mean is simply this. God desires that we relate with Him as if we were relating with a person. Not like some abstract or cosmic feature. Thus, any gains that we make in our ability to be in relationship with other people will necessarily improve our relationship ability with God. That's right. We can actually practice our relationship with God by being in relationship with one another. Which brings us back to thanking the bus driver. Quick poll. How many of you ride the bus with some frequency? All right, let's try again. How about other forms of transportation where someone else does the driving? Uber, taxi cabs, your mom taking you somewhere, okay, better. We'll go with that. Hands down. Now, raise your hand again if you thank the bus driver. That's what I expected. We all thank the bus driver. That's part of the fun of the meme. I've read hundreds of comments on statements about the moral superiority of the bus driver thanker, and all of them amount to, well, sure. Doesn't everybody thank the bus driver? Isn't it just polite? Yes, in fact, especially for those of us of the Texas persuasion. It's just good manners. And your mama or your grandmama is always watching, ready to fuss you even from beyond the grave should you fail to render such courtesy. But then again, how many of us really thank the bus driver? Not the office of the bus driver, not the role of the bus driver, but the honest-to-goodness bus driver herself. How many of us risk the formation of a relationship, however fleeting, with the human being that has safely carried us from point A to point B in Houston traffic? It's a big deal. How many of us, in addition to showing basic gratitude that courtesy demands, have taken the opportunity to practice the more personal side of relationship? The side of relationship that does more than keep us in polite society. Me too. It's harder than you think. Though not a part of our religious tradition in the way that it was for the Jews of the Second Temple, we too prefer to do the group thanking thing. We sign that annual holiday card to the administrator pool. We stand up at baseball games to welcome home military personnel. We applaud the guest soloist at the end of the concert. This is all very lovely. And it certainly has the power to strengthen our bonds with our neighbors and to assure our further participation in polite society. It has the power to cleanse, I would hold, but does it have the power to save? Maybe. Maybe not. What we need is a more personal practice. Friends, we need to thank the bus driver. I mean, really thank her. Make eye contact, be heartfelt. Switch your greeting up from time to time. Treat her like a person. And if you don't ride the bus, practice thanking other people again in that same way that treats them not as servants or as cogs in the consumerist wheel, but as people, fellow children of God, folks that, like God Himself through Jesus Christ, are seeking to be in personal relationship with. Practice giving thanks not just to people but to persons. If you do, I promise it will have a profound effect. Yes, it might be a little awkward at first. Neither of you will be quite sure what to do in this new situation. But with practice and persistence, it will change both them and you. Every time we make personal connection, particularly a personal connection rooted in thanksgiving, we are improving our ability to be in personal relationship with the one person that matters, with Jesus. Friends, there is in fact no moral superiority to the person that thanks the bus driver. Trust me, I do and I'm not. What there is a virtuous commitment to practicing the art of relationship. Relationships that improve the community, yes. Relationships that improve our lives and the lives of others, yes. But relationships that will ultimately save our souls. Now, friends, go on your way and give thanks. Amen.